Well, let's stand together for the reading of God's holy word and turn in your Bibles to 1 Samuel 22. 1 Samuel 22. All right, look there at verse 1. Verse 1. David therefore departed thence and escaped to the cave Adullam. And when his brethren and all his father's house heard it, they went down thither to him. And every one that was in distress, and every one that was in debt, and every one that was discontented, gathered themselves unto him, and he became a captain over them. And there were with him about 400 men. And David went thence to Mizpah of Moab, and he said unto the king of Moab, Let my father and my mother, I pray thee, come forth and be with you till I know what God will do for me. And he brought them before the king of Moab, and they dwelt with him all the while that David was in the hold.
Thank you, Brother Chandler. I want you to notice in verse number 4, it says, they dwelt with him all the while that David was in the hold. And the title of my message tonight is, What to Do When Your Life Gets Put on Hold. When your life gets put on hold. Let me take a few minutes and give you the background of this, and you'll understand where we're coming from tonight. That David was a young man when he suddenly became the most famous man in Israel by slaying the giant Goliath. I know it messes up some youth camp sermons, but David really wasn't a teenager when he killed Goliath. He was about 21 or 22 years of age, college aged. And when he loaded his five stone clip and grabbed his 45 caliber slingshot and went out to face Goliath. And in the power of God, David killed that walking tank, and God wrought a great victory. David suddenly was vaulted from an unknown shepherd watching his father's flock to the object of national praise. In fact, the number one hit that year was Saul has slain his thousands, but David his tens of thousands. And David became a military captain and a general. And in battle after battle, he remained undefeated as God continued to bless him and as he behaved himself wisely. You know, you have to be 40 years old to behave yourself wisely. You can be 20 years old and behave yourself wisely. And there's some 20-year-olds who live wiser than some 40-year-olds. And David was that kind of young man. He married the king's daughter, sat at the king's table, when suddenly Saul became inflamed with jealousy towards David. And that evil spirit came upon Saul. And you know, evil spirits, they tend to feed on things like jealousy and anger and pride. Three of Saul's main problems. He had a lot of pride, he had a lot of jealousy, and he had an uncontrollable temper. And David had done him no wrong. David had only done him well. David had saved them from battle and had fought his king's enemies and was even now his son-in-law. But Saul began to eye David and began to look narrowly upon him and to consider him his enemy. And one day, they're just sitting at the table, and before you know it, Saul has picked up his javelin. You always have to watch out when Saul has a javelin nearby. And he picked up that javelin and was going to spear David to the wall with it. And David just barely got out of the way in time. And there's a spear quivering in the wall where David had been. And David knew that Saul had become his enemy. And that happened a couple of times. Until finally, Saul commanded his soldiers to bring David from his own bedroom down to see Saul where Saul could kill him. And David was warned and actually was probably the first one to ever do the blanket trick where they, you know, made the bed look like he was in it. And he escaped out the window, ran for his life. And that started one of the most underemphasized times of David's life when he was a fugitive from Saul for 7 years. 7 years. From about age 23 to 30 when he became king over Judah. And then he was 37 when he became king over all of Israel. And so it was a 7-year time frame in which he was a fugitive, and then it was a 14-year time frame before he actually became king over all Israel, as Samuel had told him that he would be. Now here we have him. living in a cave called Adullam. His parents and family have come. Even Big Mouth Eliab is there to seek protection from David. And there David started an independent Baptist church. See, where is that? It's in verse number 2. Everyone that was in distress and everyone that was in debt and everyone that was discontented. That's how you start an independent Baptist church. It's one thing I mentioned to Brother Absher when they got started up there in Anna. I said, don't worry about First Baptist. You're not going to get there, folks. Don't worry about First Methodist. You're not going to get there, folks. You know who you're going to find? You're going to find the folks that these other churches don't want. And you're going to lead some of them to Christ. And they're going to get saved. And they're going to come with a lot of baggage and a lot of messed up history in their lives. And sometimes messed up families. And they're not going to be perhaps the spit and polish members that they might be in 20 years. And you got to be patient with them. And so David here, he's just on his own. And he went down and found a cave. He's living in a cave. All of it, here comes his family. And now everyone that is in distress and everyone that is in debt and everyone that is discontented, I mean, a bunch of guys that have nothing to lose. Now he's got 400 men. They're all gathered around this cave called Adullam. Can you picture in your mind this young man in a cave? 20-something years old. You know, when Brother Haynes was here Wednesday night, if you weren't here Wednesday night, you missed a blessing. Brother Joel Haynes is a great young preacher. He's 27 years old. I've known him since he was 21 or 22. And when I think of David, Brother Joel Haynes reminds me of what I think David was like. Energetic, charismatic, great personality, optimistic, upbeat. And by the way, Brother Joel's pretty tough too. He's got a black belt in karate. Did you know that? Yeah. Glad he didn't hit the pulpit too hard. Amen. I see David is that kind of a person that was just charismatic and energetic and optimistic, and he loved God and he was a go-getter, and he was a man that had gone from obscurity to become a captain and a leader in the army, and he's the king's son-in-law, and everything was bright and sunny in David's life, and now suddenly he's living in a cave. He'd gone from watching sheep to be the king, one of the king's best men, and now he's a fugitive. I guarantee you that at some point, some enterprising Jewish person had gone into business selling David slingshots. Probably came in .45 caliber and .40 caliber and .38 caliber. And the kids had .22 calibers. And everyone knew David, and now David's in hiding. It wasn't that long before that Samuel had come and had poured the oil over David's head and had anointed him to be king. And David wasn't going to try to take the kingdom, but he knew that God had anointed him, God had chosen him. He probably thought, well, I'm the king's son-in-law now. I don't know how this is going to work out, but I am in line to the throne in some ways. I am a son-in-law to the king. He had no idea how God was going to do this in his life. But now every post office has a picture wanted, dead or alive, David, with a picture of him on it. And so everything has turned upside down in his life. Suddenly and unexpectedly, and through no fault of his own, his life began to spiral out of control and was suddenly put on hold. And put on hold for 7 long years. Think about that. What was 7 years ago? 2008. Where were you in 2008? Think back to then and think, what if I had to spend from then to now living in the woods in a cave? 7 years. And to think 7 years from now, 2022. And you're going to spend the next 7 years of your life being hunted by the king with bounty hunters on your trail and men saying all kinds of evil things about you and all kinds of disappointments. That's the next 7 years of your life. David had gone from a sunshine time to a midnight time in his life, and his life was simply put in the hold or was put on hold. I want you to consider a few thoughts tonight about David. And when your life gets put on hold. Number one, when David's life was put on hold, he did not lose his faith in God. He did not lose his faith in God. Notice in verse 3 again. David went thence to Mizpah of Moab, and he said to the king of Moab, let my father and my mother, I pray thee, come forth and be with you till I know what God will do for me. You see that? David said, I don't know what's happening. His testimony was, I don't know what the future holds, but I know who holds the future. And he saw that even though his circumstances had changed, that there was still a God in heaven that had a purpose for his life and a plan for his life, and he was simply going to wait until he saw what God was going to do for him. He didn't say, well, I thought God had called me. I thought Samuel knew what he was talking about. I thought that I was going to end up the king, and I thought God had a plan for my life, but I guess that's just not right. No, he held on to his faith in God. He understood that God was still on his throne. You know, too many Christians are like the mercury in a thermometer. For the kids, that's the red stuff that goes up and down. You know, in a thermometer, in the mercury, is totally dependent on external circumstances. Mercury has no will of its own. If it's cold, the mercury goes down. If it's hot, the mercury goes up. It simply reacts to the external circumstances. That's how many Christians are. They simply go up and down, up and down, based on what is happening today. When things are good, God's on His throne. When things are bad, God's off His throne. When things are good again, God's back on His throne. When things are bad again, God's not on His throne. When things are good again, God's back on His throne. When things aren't good again, God's not back on His throne. And sometimes that's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Up, down, up, down, up, down. Based on what the circumstances are, what the temperature is. Instead of the fact that God is always on His throne. He's always on His throne. Listen, folks, your Christian life doesn't have to be a Texas Giant roller coaster of spiritual ups and downs and all arounds. Now, we're going to have our ups and downs. But you know, as we grow in grace and faith, our ups and downs should be a lot smaller. I mean, we're going to have our ups and downs. We're not always going to feel great, but they should be like this, not like this. Because God is still on His throne no matter what's happening in my life. God has not lost control of anything. And God is still all-powerful, and God is still omnipresent, and God is still omniscient. When things are good, God is still good. When things are bad, God is still good. Excuse me. God is still good. You can't base your happiness on your circumstances all the time. I mean, circumstances change, but God doesn't change. No matter what happens in Washington tonight, or what happens in Moscow tonight, or what happens in Chile tonight, or what happens in Korea tonight, or what happens in Russia tonight, or what happens in China tonight, doesn't change the fact that up above all of this, looking down on this earth, is God on His throne, and He's not perturbed by anything happening in my life. He's not. So when everything was happening, David didn't lose his faith in God. All right, number two. When his life was put on hold, number two, David did not curl up in a corner. He didn't curl up in a corner like this. Sometimes Christians will have setbacks and reversals, and they just curl up into a spiritual fetal position and refuse to take care of any of their responsibilities any further. But you know what David did? He's in a cave. He still trusts God. All of a sudden, here comes his family. Now, hold on. A couple of years ago, they thought so poorly of David that when Samuel came, they didn't even bring him in out of the field. He's the youngest of eight. Nobody cared what David thought. But now, they're all coming to David. David, we're afraid that Saul's going to take it out on us because we're your family. We need help. And so David took it upon himself to take his family and take them over to Moab, where he had some distant relatives through Ruth, his great-great-grandma, and got them to the king of Moab and asked him to take care of his family. Then he came back to his home base, his cave again. And you know what he found? A bunch of guys in debt running from the IRS. And a bunch of guys that were discontented. And a bunch of guys that were in despair and distress. And they said, David, we need a captain. We need a leader. We need someone to follow. And David said, look, I'll take care of you. You see, instead of curling up in a corner because life had taken an unexpected turn, David kept on living. And he kept on taking care of responsibilities and kept on taking care of business. And he just kept on going because he trusted that God was still on his throne. Hey, listen, just because you can't do what you wanted to do doesn't mean you can't do something. And just because your plans that you had have been put on hold and you can't see them now, doesn't mean there's nothing for you to do now. But so often Christians, they think when they have a setback, all of a sudden they just want to curl up and say, well, forget it, I give up. I give up on God, give up on my family, give up on my job, give up on my school, give up on everything, instead of simply doing what they can right now with what they have. And since my wife is not in here, I'll tell you two stories about her. We laughed about this Wednesday night with the Haynes because we just got back from the Haynes on our vacation 2 years ago. You remember our house was being renovated at that time. We expected when we got back from this vacation that our house would be done. We got back, the house was not done. Yeah, I remember it was raining. And we got out of our van after being on the road all day and went into our house, and they had done our living room floor. It's kind of hard to explain, but it sloped down to the hallway. Literally sloped. Instead of simply raising it up and having a flat space and then a step down, it sloped. And it was wet mud still, wet concrete. And my wife looked at it, and I said, I'll never forget this. It's funny now. That the bed was off the box springs, and I remember coming in, and she's sitting on the box springs with her back against the wall. Her hair's all wet and hanging down around her face, and she's just sobbing. Because the house was not what we expected. And that's one of the few, and I just say that because sometimes people think, Mrs. Raspberry, she never gets down. Hey folks, we're all human beings. Everybody gets down sometimes, and that was really a huge disappointment for her. And, see, I get upset, she gets down. But we got it fixed, you know, and tell you another story. You know, she bought this store recently, and when she first started to look for the financing for it, she tried to do it in just her name without my name on there. And I have excellent credit, just so you know. And so she went for the loan. She went through all this work and trouble and all this paperwork and stuff, and it was a real pain in the neck. And she got through all this stuff, and she turned it in, and the bankers are saying, yeah, it looks okay, it should be okay. And it came back, and she was declined. And I remember she sat in my recliner in the living room. She said, I'm just letting you know, I'm going to be down the rest of the day. I'm just going to sit here and sulk the rest of the day. And her kind, compassionate husband said this, well, if you're going to give up that easy, maybe you don't need to have a business. She said, where's the compassion? I said, that was just one bank, one loan attempt. I said, you don't just give up because you tried one time and it didn't work. There's other banks. I said, let's try other banks. And I said, next time, make sure you put my name on there. I've got good credit. And so she did, and eventually got the loan and got the business and doing well with it. She enjoys it. But I'm saying that all of us sometimes, when things don't work out how we want them to, it's real tempting to just sit down and sulk or just say, well, I give up on it because things haven't worked out the way I wanted them to. Or just to act like a spiritual baby sucking our thumb while we lose our faith and lose our courage. But David didn't do that. When his life was put on hold, he took care of his family. He took care of these men. He became their captain. He began turning these dispirited, discontented, indebted individuals into the men who became the mighty men of David. When God puts you on hold, you can't stop living. I was thinking back to when I graduated from Bible college, back in another dispensation, it seems like these days. And we had a saying back then that some guys are ready to attack hell with a squirt gun. Anyone ever heard that? That's how I was. 21 years old, already married, had a kid due a few months after I graduated. That's Beth, in case you're wondering. And I was on fire. I was ready to do something for God. And all I wanted to do was preach or be on staff somewhere, or call the pastor of church or something. And I'd had a good college career. I'd made good grades. I'd got awards, I was president of the student body, all that stuff that doesn't mean a thing now. And guys are saying, oh, you're going to do great things, God's going to use you, and all the nice things we say that young people take into their heads and think they really means a lot. And I just wanted to do something. And you know what I ended up doing for the next 3 years of my life? I mean, you know what I'm doing. pulling a pallet jack. Or this. Driving a forklift. Or this. That's driving a hostling mule, moving the trailers around the dock. And all night long. Night shifts the whole time. And you know, there was one night I got up about 3 a.m. on the hostler mule, had this little stepping area along the engine, and I was just standing out there looking up at the stars, and I looked up at the stars and I said, God, have you forgotten me? I went to Bible college to be a preacher, not a dock worker. And I felt like God had put me on hold. But you know what? We still stay busy in our church. Never had an assistant pastor position come open for us. Never had a church call me. Never had a pulpit committee ask me anything. Just was like we had graduated and ceased to exist. But you know, God had a plan for my life, didn't He? Sure He did. But sometimes it seems like God puts things on hold. But you can't just curl up in a corner and cry. You've got to keep on going. And so that's what David did. Now, number three, when his life was put on hold, he did not lash out. He didn't lash out. Now, everything David was going through was someone's fault. Whose fault was it? Saul's. David hadn't done anything to Saul. David had done Saul good. And Saul was repaying David evil for good. Now, here's one way you can tell the difference between strong character and weak character. A person who has weak character spends their whole life looking for someone to blame. It's their fault. It's their fault. It's my parents' fault. It's the boss's fault. It's society's fault. I'm a victim. They spend their whole life looking to blame. If the marriage is having trouble, it's my spouse's fault. It's my kid's fault. It's my parents' fault. It's my grandparents' fault. It's the church's fault, etc. Well, a person who has strong character goes through life looking for solutions to problems, not someone to blame for the problem. And you know, David, through all these 7 years, never lifted his hand against Saul. And get this, never even lifted his tongue against Saul. David never said, as recorded in the Scripture, one negative thing about Saul. Y'all with me? He didn't say, that Saul, he's this or that. In fact, twice, David had an opportunity to kill Saul. And he didn't. Good old Abishai. When I think of Abishai, I think he looked like a Rambo. That's what I think. It looks like Rambo. And here they are in the cave. Saul's gone in the cave. There's no one else around. Abishai says, let me kill him. I just want to kill him. David said, how can we touch the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? And so he snuck forward and he cut just the hem of his garment. Later on, they went down in the middle of the camp in the middle of the night and they were all asleep. And Abishai's got his spear and he says, he won't even make a sound. He won't even say anything. It's over. Abishai, he just liked killing people. Just be honest. If you're a king, you need someone like that on your payroll. I don't think we want to put him in the Sunday school class though. Certainly not on a bus route. He's got the spear. I'm ready to kill him. Just give me the word. And David said, hey, listen, I haven't changed my mind. Even if it is now pushing 7 years, I'm still not going to lift my hand against God's anointed. God anointed him to be king. And I'm not going to be one that takes him out. God will take him out. It's important for us to understand that when our life is put on hold, we shouldn't look for people to blame and lash out at them, but simply realize that there's someone greater in charge of things and it's up to us to respond properly. I can't control what others do, but I ought to be able to control what I do. Sometimes that's not easy. You say amen right there because it's not easy. When you want to jack someone else, someone's jaw, but instead you have to turn the other cheek, it's not easy. And people are saying things about you, and Saul was saying things about David, but David never said anything about Saul. He didn't lash out at the one who was to blame. Number four, When his life was put on hold, number four, David's faith was a testimony to others. I find four groups that looked at David's testimony in this situation. It was a testimony to his family. David went from little brother to the leader. By the way, it's very important that you have a testimony with your family. I've said that 1,000 times. You teach your children a little bitty bit by what you say. A lot more by what you do. And the most by what you are. Well, I don't know why my kids don't act right. I tell them and tell them and tell them. Well, so what if you tell them and tell them and tell them if you're not backing up by the way that you live? I mean, all of us parents, we have a ton of good advice. That's probably right. But our kids can't hear our great advice over our sorry example sometimes. And so, he was a testimony to his family, and it was a testimony to a foreigner. Here's this king of Moab that hears David's testimony that, hey, God's going to do something for me. It was a testimony to his friend, and it was a testimony to his followers. These men had, I mean, they already got their own problems. They don't need a leader who's mully grubbing about his problems. They need someone who has an answer and has someone who trusts God. I mean, these guys, they got their own debts and they got their own discontents and they got their own distresses. They don't need David saying, oh, guys, feel sorry for me. Man, I got it rough. They needed to see someone that had faith in God. And if someone is following you, they need to see your faith. They need to see a testimony through tough times and to see that you still trust God and you're still willing to obey the Lord and serve Him. And I can tell you, it's not always easy to serve the Lord Sunday after Sunday. There are things that happen before services, and there's things that happen during the week where many of us, we just come to the pulpit, or we come to our Sunday school class, or we come to our area of service, and I tell you, our heart's bleeding out somewhere. We don't really feel great. It's disappointing sometimes to serve the Lord. Not disappointing in the Lord, but just disappointing sometimes in people. But you know what? There's other people following us that need to see our faith. They need to see our faith. That's not always easy, but it's always the right thing. David's faith was a testimony to others. Hey, anyone can do the right thing in easy times. That's not hard. It's when things are tough. You want to know somebody? I mean, really know someone's character? See them when they don't get what they wanted. When they didn't get what they wanted, you'll see a lot of their character. It's easy to respond the right way when you get what you wanted. You find out a lot about people when they don't get what they want. And David was showing through his testimony through these 7 years. Do you know why? Listen, you know why these men were willing to do anything for David? I mean, years later, when David's king and these men are his mighty men, David's in the middle of a battle. He's hunkered down by a campfire one night. Bethlehem's nearby, and he says, oh, man, I grew up in Bethlehem. They have the best water there in the well. That was so sweet. I'd do anything to have a cup of that well water. And some of his men, they fought through the Philistines, fought all the way over there, got one cup of water out of the well of Bethlehem, fought their way back, fighting with one hand, balancing with the other, got all the way back to David and said, here, David, here's some water from the well of Bethlehem. We heard you wanted some. We want you to have it. You know why those men were willing to do such things for David? Because when he was on the hold and things weren't going his way, he gave them hope and purpose and direction and guidance. And they drew from his faith and they drew strength from his faith. That's why when Brother Smith comes out here and he says he wants something or something he'd like to have, and I hear that, I want to do it for him. A couple of years ago, I hope this isn't inappropriate. Now you're all listening. Brother Smith's a country boy, all right? He pastored a big city church. He's a country boy. He asked me, son, do you have any old toilet seats I could have? I said, no, we usually throw them away. He said, well, I want one for my deer camp. Now, I guess you can figure out what that's for in a deer camp, all right? And that night he came to church and I handed him a big Home Depot bag, and on the inside it had a brand new toilet seat cover in it. Boy, he died laughing. That was the funniest thing. And then this time when he was here, He said, my cane keeps falling over. I've always got to hang it on something. I'm trying to talk to people. And so we found one called a hurricane. It's got a special base on it. It just stands by itself. It's not going to fall over. That didn't cost much. But you know what? He did so much for me in modeling faith in my life. Through all of his hardships, and he had plenty of them, I saw a consistent faith that I just want to do things for him now. And when you model that kind of faith to others and they see you go through your hard times and your disappointments and the times when you're pressed out of measure and above strength, that is when you set an example for your family. That is when you set an example for your friends. That is when you set an example for those who aren't saved. And that is where you set an example for those who are following you when they see you tough out your tough times. Let me review. When his life was put on hold, he didn't lose his faith. He didn't curl up in a corner. He didn't lash out. It was a testimony to others. Fifthly, when his life was put on hold, number five, David waited for clear leadership. He waited for God to tell him what to do. Notice in verse 5. And the prophet Gad said unto David, abide not in the hold, depart and get thee into the land of Judah. And David departed and came into the forest of Horeth. Now here's something about David that his son didn't pick up on. Solomon surrounded himself with engineers and builders. David always had at least one man of God in his life. Samuel, Gad, Nathan. These were men of God who knew God and they could speak for God, and David listened to them. They even had enough authority that when David was wrong, Nathan could get in his face and say, thou art the man. And David didn't have him killed. David knew that he needed God in his life, and these men represented God in his life. He wanted them to be able to speak to him plainly. Can I tell you, as a pastor, very few Christians will allow the pastor to speak plainly to them without getting all offended and upset. Most of the preaching has to be done from the pulpit now, because if you actually went to someone face to face and rebuked them, they'd drop out of church, go join the church down the street. And David, however, was waiting for God to speak to him. And he was stayed in the hold until finally the prophet Gad said, go over here. And so David went over there. He was waiting for divine leadership in his life. And when God puts your life on hold, the worst thing you can do is start running everywhere that God hasn't sent you to. Well, number six, David didn't put God on a timetable. David did not put God on a timetable. David didn't know how long this would last. He didn't know it'd be 7 years. God didn't say that. Could have been 27 years for all he knew. I've heard preachers say, I've heard people say, well, if things don't change in 1 month, I'm going to do this. Who are we to put things on a timetable? What if I said, well, if my church, I'm praying for 5 new families in our church, and if I don't see 5 new families in our church by the end of this year, I'm just going to go somewhere else. Who am I to decide that? Either God leads me or He doesn't, not based on whether 5 families join or not. And sometimes, though, people get discouraged because they have to wait for a while and they start making decisions because they put God on a schedule. They expect God to work because they said to. That's not how it works. Here's God up in heaven and looks down at us and we say up to Him, if you don't do something within the next 7 days, I'm going to do something. God says, who are you to tell me what I have to do within 7 days or not? Like one of my kids saying to me, Dad, if you don't get me this in the next 10 days, I'm going to join the circus. I said, you want me to drive you down there? You don't tell me what I have to do within 10 days. I'm your dad. I tell you what you do in 10 days. And yet we look up at God and say, well, if things don't change within the next 6 months, I'm going to do this. Who are we to decide the timetable on things? We need to learn to trust God. And David, can you imagine this day after day after day, 365 days a year, a second year, a third year, a fourth year, a fifth year of running, living by campfires, living off the land, going from one country to the next country, one town to the next town, from one part of the mountains to another part of the mountains, year after year after year. But he didn't put God on a timetable. He simply was living by faith until God gave direction. One last thought. David's life really wasn't on hold. It was all part of God's plan. You know, Sometimes I look back, as I mentioned, when I graduated from college, I wanted to do something. But you know what? God had a plan for my life. It wasn't that God didn't know what to do with me for 3 years. It's simply that I needed to let God work out His plan. God had a time schedule. God never stops working on us or in us so that He can work through us. When God fashions us, He does it through the only way possible, through difficulty, trials, and hardships. They knock off our rough edges. They teach us things we can't learn in books. They ingrain things, they etch things into our consciences and our minds. We learn lessons the hard way. And those are the lessons we remember. And God is doing these things in our life, and we must remember that not every battle is won in a day. Sometimes it takes years for God to work out that purpose. And we say, why am I on hold? And God says, you're not on hold. I've got it all planned out. I've got a plan. Just be faithful. 7 years of your life, but I'm going to give you the kingdom. And you're going to have to do this for this amount of time, but I'm still working on some things. And God, have a timing, and simply trust me. And David became the greatest king Israel ever had. But it was only because God put him through some fires and some trials and put his life on hold. I like when you put verse 4 and verse 3 together. All the while that David was in the hold, till I know what God will do for me.